Life is a continual intoxication. The pleasure passes, but the headache remains. Hello and welcome to episode 17 of Same Old Wombles. We're brought to you by some of us responsible for putting together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated and non-partisan. We're the Same Old Wombles. I'm Mark Lewis. And of course, as it's episode 17, baby, if you've got to go away, I don't think I can take the pain. Won't you stay another day? Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor, Niall Cooper, and hopefully joining us later on, Matt Cooper. On tonight's show, we have an upwardly mobile review of Swindon Away Game, a little half-season review, and of course, some numbers. Welcome to episode 17.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them. Done what we should, fought as hard as we can.
Mark. Are you basically saying that we're all just drunks? Life is an intoxication. I don't drink, Mark. So you're going to have to change that. You're going to have to change life is like, I don't know, a glass of water. A bit like
I'll tell you why I did that. Go on. Without bringing the mood down at the start. Unfortunately, my father-in-law passed away last week. But one of his favourite phrase expressions was death to the French. I don't know where he came up with it, but he always used to like, every time you did a toast, he would just do death to the French. Now, and then, of course, we lost to France anyway.
Now, as it goes, right, on the death to the French stuff, right, I have two hats on here. One is my hat of amnesty, as you all know, therefore advocating murder, not actually a good thing, Mark. But if I was to then say to my brother Matt, who has now joined us, my attitude was to the French when we played them, I couldn't possibly comment. I'd have to leave it up to Matt and I'd have to deny everything.
Murderous look, Larry Coops.
Yeah, murderous looks okay. Whereas I thought if I started off the pod with death to the French as the first thing I said, that probably wouldn't necessarily get us any more viewers than the tens or hundreds that we might already have on Spotify.
Why are you upset, Mark? Because I tell you, I'm still upset.
You know what? I genuinely wasn't. I went to the Swindon game with my sister. I was just saying to the guys, went to the Swindon game, came back to my sister's. She lives in a little cottage in the middle of nowhere, which has therefore no residual heating. So she's got a roaring fire going. Got back just in time for the kickoff. And I was frustrated because it felt like we didn't really throw a punch. I mean, all the reviews I've read since then, they're saying, yeah, we did quite well. It's like, not the game I was watching. So, like we talked about on the pods before, I've been less engaged with this World Cup than any other World Cup before. I remember World Cups from 78 onwards, 82, Brian Robson, 86, Lineker scoring all those goals, obviously Italia 90, then all the other ones we didn't qualify for. But no, just wasn't engaged with this at all. And therefore, because I wasn't engaged, I wasn't emotionally involved to be upset.
I did let it pass relatively quickly. But during that 90 minutes, I was I thought we played really well. Although England showed a lot of character. And I thought the French were a bunch. And you can put whatever you want in there.
I was upset. I still am upset. It's just one of those things that comes around so rarely, and I wasn't really engaged with it genuinely, I think, until this stage, because it felt like it meant something. It felt, genuinely felt like if we could have got through this that game, we could have been in the final.
But, yeah. No, I totally agree. I think
I just think until this moment, and now I'm upset.
No, It looked like, yeah, go on. No, I was going to say, look, you did when I looked at it, I thought, oh, you know, this is, there's a chance for England to progress to the final, which would be really interesting. And to be honest, I, like I said to you guys before, I don't really follow England in the World Cup, but I was just like, oh no, everyone's going to be really grumpy now, aren't they? Where I kind of was thinking, if it keeps going, everyone I bump into is going to sort of be quite happy because England are doing well. And I was just like, oh, great. You know, there's a few sports bars around here. I thought, brilliant. People are just going to be really grumpy now.
Every morning I do a news list, right? Amnesty. And there's like, you know, on the Monday morning where there's like 15, 20 of all the kind of big cheeses all there, right? And I have to kind of run through what's happening in the world, what the kind of big issues are. And they have been bored senseless by me because for months it's all been, and we've got done this on Qatar and that on Qatar, and it's like this World Cup and all that sort of stuff. And they all know I'm a massive football fan. And I always get any kind of like mention of the Dons or anything like that into the morning meeting. And like, you know, this is like all the people who are making all the decisions about what we put on social media and all that rest of it. And today I had to go into that meeting and say, look, it's all right. World Cup's over. Nothing's happening now. We could all just get on with our normal day jobs. It's all forgotten. Don't care. And that's kind of where my way of dealing with it, because we played well and we were, you know, unlucky. But we, this is not called the same old England, is it? This podcast. No. Right, we have to get over that. It's called The Same Old Wombles. And in hindsight, Mark probably did the honourable thing of going to Swindon when it was bloody cold, whereas the rest of us, my brother and me, my case, we went gallivanting off to Greenwich to watch it in a pub full of England fans of a game that we don't even remember and nothing ever happened and we don't care.
I would have rather done the social thing, to be honest, of watching England. But actually, I was adding Swindon to a list of grounds, you know. I'm on about ground 55. And actually, total coincidence, Saturday was my 45th anniversary of watching Wimbledon games.
That is awesome.
10th of December 1977, which is quite crazy in itself.
Do your 55 grounds include all the ones in the CCL?
Oh, God, no. If you had the CCL on, then it's probably closer to 100.
Oh, I see. The CCL was like, that was the glory era of travelling and seeing away games, in my view. Absolutely loved it.
No, I totally loved it as well. What I'm annoyed about is I didn't keep an active list of where I went because there were some mad grounds. All I remember is just kind of walking down a track and there was a ground there. Or
that was
so, well, who knows? Like, I don't know. And there was another one where... And there was another one I remember where I was just like, where is this ground? It was literally behind all of the terrace housing. I was just like, what? And I just don't know where these places are anymore because I didn't make a note of it. But it was so... that was when it was... It's fun to travel away, you know, but that was when it was really fun because they were random.
I went with my son to watch his rugby team play in a rugby final a couple of weeks ago, and it was somewhere near Camberley, and we're driving down like A3, A31, that bits of Surrey, and all I'm doing is I'm passing signs for Farnham and Cove and Aldershot and Hartley Whitney and all these other places. So I told him the Merstham cheese roll story. And he doesn't, you know, he's almost 16. He's a smart kid. You know, he was on the pod a few weeks back. But he just couldn't believe that this has actually genuinely happened. It's like, yes, this is completely true. You couldn't make it up, but it's completely true. They made, you know, I don't know, 250 cheese rolls or something and then couldn't give them away afterwards because they just had made too many.
Mark, it was 1,000.
It was 1,000?
It's 1,000 cheese rolls. That's what they made. I know that because I remember interviewing him afterwards. He was the most lovely man, the guy who was the chairman of Merstham. But those are the grounds that I love. You know, I look back and I loved Farnham. Farnham was brilliant. Walking down, you go into this lovely little posh village in the middle of nowhere. And there were, you know, and we'd all descend. There'd be 2,000 Wimbledon fans. These pubs have never seen it. And obviously we're immensely middle class as Wimbledon fans. So we were delighted to find gastro pubs. Matt, I think, had a bottle of Merlot, that sort of thing. It is like just typical, you know, I was probably going, you know, I think I wasn't quite as bad as some people might think. I didn't say like, let's have a tofu stir fry. I am a meat eater, but you know, it was that kind of like, hold on, I want my lamb and my red wine jus and my Dauphinese potatoes, please. That sort of stuff. It was like, it was glorious. That's what I miss.
It was great. I mean, all of that time was brilliant. I think the fact that we were thousands going there and you could change ends, you know, you could just walk around, was quite fun, was quite a really good fun thing to do. But as well as those, you know, like kind of like funky grounds in these little villages where it was really, you took over a place and it was wonderful. There was, wasn't it Feltham where we went and the roof had been burnt off. So it was, and it was played literally on a carpet. I mean, not in a grass carpet way, an actual carpet with actual rips in it. I just remember that game was just like, what are we doing here? That was hilarious.
That was under the
literally under the flight
path.
Yeah, it's exactly. So we just saw airplanes flying.
Bedfont was closer to the flight path. Bedfont was so close to the flight path you could actually see and read what type of plane it was from underneath the.
Was back that wheel. The place? Was it Bedfont who were playing there? Because it was. I mean, this was a burnt-out yes. roof.
Oh, that was Feltham.
That was Feltham, yeah.
And it was just,
Bedfont
was
nearby.
Ripped up carpet we were playing on.
Oh, can you just remember another one I love was Southall? Do you remember Southall with the curry?
Oh, yeah, the curry.
That's the way ends ever.
That was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant. That was all those lovely curries. Mark, I realise we've utterly completely ruined your agenda. Like,
don't worry about it. It's the whole point about being so much wobbles. We should be able to listen about stuff that happened 25 years ago.
Happened? I've missed 2 weeks and suddenly there's an agenda.
All like made up.
Matt, I'm
just delighted because I actually went to go to Swindon so I can talk about going to an away game that no one else got off their sofa for.
What happened, Mark? Let me guess, it was cold and not much happened.
We were unlucky. We should have won.
We were not unlucky, no. They had one shot, literally one shot. They had a lot of possession. And I had the guy behind me that was convinced every time they broke into the penalty area that they were going to score. But fortunately, they couldn't shoot. Even Johnny Williams had obviously left his shooting boots with the Wales squad in Qatar, so nothing happened there. No, we had four... one-on-ones in the first half, either Chislett or Davidson, all of which they shot straight at a keeper, basically. And Swindon were very, actually, straightforward, down-to-earth stadium, straightforward, down-to-earth team, tried to play out from the back, play some decent passing football. But they had a 5'7", 5'8" centre-forward. So funnily enough, they had no end product whatsoever. But they're above us in the table. So if they're above us in the table, then I think we've still got some decent hope, really. But yeah, it was a decent point. It was a freezing cold day. And it's one of those days where you make sure you get no injuries. You know, we had a few breaks towards the end. Asale again looked dangerous on the break. But once again, the same issues that we have seen in many, many games, i.e. we don't have a plan B if Davison is shackled or just too tired.
I think he was tired. I thought he was tired, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They were talking a bit on, I watched an iFollow, but they were talking a bit about the fact that because the pitch was probably not great to play on, being how hard it probably was, that some players may have picked up some niggles and stuff. So I think actually having a cancelled game is probably a good thing. And also Nick's kicking at the end got really tricky. And I think, again, there was a lot of discussion about how that was part of the pitch. But yeah, Davison, I thought they should have changed. I thought we could have nicked it. Actually, and I would like us to have taken Davison off and changed it up sooner than the substitutes we did have. But, you know, it's a good point. But I kept looking, thinking 3 points would be really good.
But you look at a table now and where we are, like the kind of run we've put on, you know, that has been a real transformation. And I'm looking forward to getting NYC. I think having him as an option coming on again would just be like, you know, there is good hope out there, I think, for the team as we are. If we're doing, I'll move swiftly on to my mid-season review, which was like started well, then completely collapsed. Then they got rid of some idiot on the board and then we started winning and that's it. And now we've got some other person on the board who's clearly going to take us onto a new level.
I was interested though, Mark, because they... We put on Hudlin over NYC.
Yeah.
Good move, Babbitt. And also, can I ask the question right now? Is he going back?
Hudlin?
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea because I'm not officially on the board yet. And even if I was, I wouldn't be allowed to tell you. Niall
is
about to leave the board, so he probably will just tell us anyway.
What do you think, though? Do you think he'll go back?
He doesn't look like an option that Jackson likes playing, in simple terms. So I think if there's an option to take him back, then I would take him. I would allow that to happen. I would get a different target man. I'd get Robinson back. And then then you've got NYC and Robinson and Davidson and hopefully one other. And you can do what Niall's been banging on about for a while, which is switch in two forwards on, two forwards off.
On the huddling front, right? Now, this is, I do know why. I am still technically on the board. Mark will know in about a week why. And then hopefully he won't be with us very long. But there is a reason why. You just have to think, like, what the kind of deals that are all done when you have people coming on loan and all the rest of it, and what kind of the kind of prerequisites about having those people there. And this is absolutely blatant when you look at the last few games about Hudlin's appearance in the pitch. And that's, fill in the gaps. And I'll say no.
That's obvious. If you ever play on loan, you want them to play.
I don't think gaps
are we filling in?
Want them to play. That's what I'm saying.
No, the loanee club, so in this case Huddersfield, would want him to play.
I know more.
Yeah, that would be part of the clause. No, but that would be part of a deal, wasn't it? Obviously, like, surely on loan deals there'll be a thing that says we would expect this player to play X number of games during X period. That's part of the deal. And I guess that sweetens the cost up and down. The only thing I want to know, right? Okay. As I may have said on the podcast or not, but people know here, I'm wearing I've been wearing as many layers as possible since probably October, right? Because I get cold. Okay, in the last few days I'm wearing 7. What? You can wear gloves as a footballer. That is allowed, right? So why does Huddling come on with a long sleeves and then is like pulling his sleeves over his hands? That doesn't seem like that's going to be very useful. Just wear gloves. It's weird. I was just like, wear gloves.
Time out. I want to do a time out session here because out of all the things, Adam, you've taken from Huddling, the one thing that you've taken from the whole of Huddling's experience is, why is he not wearing gloves?
No, because he looks amateur. He looks like he's playing in the playground. He hasn't come fully kitted.
Why? You've
taken from everything that Huddling's done or not done for us, and it is, why aren't you wearing gloves? It's nice. In a weird way, I like that sort of compassion. It's just like, I want you to be going around before games going, oh, you look a bit nippy. I think you should wrap up a little bit.
Sal had gloves.
I think that the song for this week has to be It's Cold Outside. It's Christmas.
No,
Benny.
No, the song for this week has got to be Hard to Beat, Hard Fire, because that's genuinely what we are. That is the one lesson to take away from Swindon before I move this rabble of a conversation on, is that actually we look like a solid team where the back four believe in themselves, the goalkeeper's confident in the back four and vice versa, which certainly wasn't the case last season.
Can I just interrupt? I'm going to interrupt, right? We're not having hard fire. Just saying.
I love it. I've got away for a bit. There's an agenda now. And now Mark's trying to get us all serious and talking stuff through. Jeez, I don't even know what's happened, to be honest with you. I don't recognise it.
I know. It's a shambles, isn't it? Anyone think it was Christmas? Okay. So in the absence of other main guests, and hope everybody enjoyed the guest slot we had last week with Danny Macklin, I thought it would be a sensible idea to do a little bit of a review of the season so far. We've played 21 games, so we're not quite at half season length, but we haven't played Newport, we haven't played Stevenage, but we've played everybody else in the league. So the question is, are we where we thought we would be in terms of positioning the table? Are we higher than we thought we might be? Are we flattering to deceive?
Can you do that again, but in the style, but with Bruce Forsyth voice? That's what I'd rather you do.
Good game. Yeah. Higher, higher, lower, 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 higher, higher.
That's what I want. Thank you, Mark. I would say, sadly, I think we're lower than I would have expected us at this stage. I think we have turned the corner, and I think I'm more optimistic than I thought I would be at this stage, but I think we're lower than where I wanted us to be.
I'm totally, it's lower than where I wanted us to be, but I wanted us to be like Orient. And I wonder though, if you look at the budget and what a few people were saying before the season started, you know, mid-table is kind of, is an expectation for a lot of people. But I guess over the years, we've been kind of blessed with, you know, apart from the last few years in League One, of overperforming. So I don't know. I'd like it to be a little bit closer to the playoffs. One or two points off the playoffs would be quite. Maybe we're two or three points down. What about you, Mark?
Well, I think I said, and someone can look back in the archive, as I say, for like episode one or two or whatever, when we all did a prediction as to where we'd finish the season. I think I said eighth or ninth, just outside the playoffs. And we're not really that far from there, which, considering we've changed our whole defence by hook or by crook, we've changed our formation. We've got a new manager in who's had to learn how his players really work, and more importantly, how the fans really want football to be played. And that took a while, and it really wasn't very big or very pretty or very clever while it was happening. We're about where we probably deserve to be. Do I want us to be higher? Yes. Do I think we can be higher? Yes. But the reality is, I went through it the other day, the only team above us in the table, we're 12th, I believe. The only team above us in the table that we've beaten is Orient, and we've drawn a few others, but otherwise we've lost to people like Walsall and Carlisle, and Newport, excuse me, Northampton. But apart from Barrow, I got to say, I haven't seen any particularly, as a 90-minute performance, quality teams play against us. Barrow deserved to beat us, but I don't think anyone else, even the teams that have beaten us, I didn't see anyone else that really deserved to beat us. So that's the disappointing bit, that we're not higher.
Yeah, no, definitely. So in preparation for this, obviously, I needed to see all the results in front of me. So this is now the sponsored start of the part of the program. So if you want to see a really good website that's been going since 2002... that shows you all the results in one nice little list. Obviously, afcdons.net, also the sock sponsors of Terry Skiverton this season. It's the best unofficial website. It's probably the only one that's been going and carried on going. So, yeah, but I think, I mean, should we have been higher? Did I think we were going to be higher? I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure what I said if I predicted anything at the beginning of this podcast. But yeah, when we went down, I was like, well, we were punching above our weight. And so, you know, I felt we were League Two at this point and we needed to sort of solidify and just kind of get the base stuff right and kind of move forward and then sort of, you know, work towards future promotion. So I didn't expect us to be instantly promoted. If we get in the playoffs, that'd be great because there's obviously money and that'd be fun and exciting and interesting. I'd like to do that. I was a bit stressed to begin with, and we obviously were much lower, but I think this is more in line with how we have been playing. And like Mark says, there's not many teams that we above us that have really done us in. So, and now that we seem to have got our form, which is great. I mean, the other random thing, but again, you guys can tell me if any of this is correct, and I don't know if it is. And I was jumping on Facebook or something, well, I don't know why I do these things, but anyway, just to keep up with some of the interesting commentary that occasionally happens that relates to Don's Trust board members, having known one that's leaving, no one that's on it. There was a whole discussion about that JJ after the Sutton game was going to quit basically, and that he was kind of given some convincing talk to not leave and was also told to sort of change up the formation at that point, and that, you know, and someone was sort of attributing that to being the massive turnaround. I don't see how that is necessarily the case. I think it's just taken a little while for the team to gel. So, yeah, but when you look at that, obviously, we have started to really sort of motor on. I don't know who, I mean, the problem is we've got now is we're going to have weird fixtures with cancellations and frozen pitches and stuff. That is going to really affect our squad because we don't have the depth. We still don't have depth. I don't want to get rid of anyone. I just want to get some more people. that's, you know, that's what I want to do. So let's, you know, that I think is our, again, our weakness, is that if we have a couple of injuries or players are tired because they're having to play every single game in quite in winter-like conditions, that is going to affect us and that could mess us up. But I think we're way away from being problematic in a sense, but we could fall a bit if we're not careful.
Football fans are either optimists or pessimists. So, of course, we could fall a bit. But, I mean, I'm looking at the table now. You've got Bradford, who we drew with, even though we had Owen Doyle playing on his debut, and we should have won. They only equalised in the last minute. They're only 3 points ahead of us. They're in the last playoff spot. Carlisle have been iffy and have drawn 9 games. Mansfield have lost 7 games, and actually we were 2-0 up there and lost a dodgy red card against Gunter. And as I say, Barrow within a decent team. So Stevenage and Leighton Orient appear to be head and shoulders above everyone else. But actually, we're probably in a better place now, at this point, after almost half a season, than we were before we obviously came through in the great late run to get seventh place in 2016.
I mean, I think that, you know, as a team, there is a lot of gelling. There is a lot of stuff going on there. I do think that there was a turning point where JJ was probably really close to being sacked or got rid of. And what I like about JJ is I think he listened and I think he adapted and I think he took advice. And I think that's what we've got in a good young manager, that he's adaptable. I know Mark has posted a couple of times on our Twitter feed, same old Wombles, by the way, on Twitter, that would we have won these games with under a different manager, or would we not have lost? And it's like you can look at it and go, that's the difference. This is a team that has got, one, it's getting solid, and one, it is adaptable. And there is change there and there is different options. And that's the big difference. That's the thing that gives me hope. And it's like you can see that developing with the run that we're on, that we're going to be difficult to beat. So the big teams are going to find it difficult. And we have speed to counter. So if people come to us and try and attack us, we can actually break and score quickly. And I think that's our big benefit. Whereas I can actually see us being really doing well against the top teams and actually struggling a little bit to break some other teams down. So I think that's what could be interesting. But yeah, I think there's a lot of promise there, you know, about how we can go on.
I think so. I think what's interesting is that we have, like we say, JJ's adapted, which I think at the beginning of the season, we didn't think he would do. So I think we all thought he would get stuck in a style of play, but he didn't. He's changed it. And We're now playing to our strengths. We're getting the ball up the field much quicker because it was so slow at the beginning. So all of that is a really, really good thing. And I think now that he's got a relationship with the players, he's got a relationship with us as well. So I think that all helps. That totally helps in developing our team. I guess my interesting thing is, would he change it again? Because is there a different way of playing? Would he go to two up front, for instance, which I'm not sure. Sorry, Mark.
It's, well, I guess, as you say, he's been adaptable and he's prepared to go for two up front when he has to. He's played Hudlin and Davison a few times, mainly when we're chasing games like Harrogate. But actually, if he has more options, as in he has more strikers to bring off the bench, if Chislett or Salah having poor games, then he can actually bring someone off the bench wide. That will work as well. I mean, Pell is not a one-trick pony, but I suspect with the amount of shit-assery he's doing, then he's going to wind up some referees. He certainly wound up Swindon on Saturday. Obviously, we saw the incident that happened recently against Grimsby, which he didn't paint him in a particularly good light. So that could be dangerous. That could end up with players going out or managers going out, actually advising their midfield hard man to basically wind him up and try and make him lose his temper and so on. So we need a plan B. There are times, I have no idea whether or not we're going to get any other creative players in the transfer window. But there have been times, definitely, where we get to the edge of the box and team defending backs are four. We haven't got anything to break them down with, which is what you expect because you're in League Two. But we've seen NYC can do that. He scored, you know, a decent amount of goals in a short period of time. And hopefully, if we have the opportunity to ease him back in again, so much the better. I mean, I think this is actually a good point to be able to then lead on literally position by position to see which players we've had. We've used something like 28 players this season, believe it or not. And obviously, in goal is about the easiest one that we know, that going into the season, people thought, well, maybe Broom's actually going to properly push Zanef, and Zanef isn't necessarily going to be the keeper. But after all, he's turned out he was. For that, we must obviously ask Mr. Niall Confidence Cat Cooper.
This is, though, the whole point. When I called Zanef a confidence keeper, that is exactly what he is. You know, he is currently confident. So he's performing well. And look, it's only because having, when I was younger, played in goal a few times and seen a lot of other people. And often, well, you often look at the positions you play in. So I play goalkeeper or play right back, right? So you look at your positions and you kind of study it, and you can see goalkeepers. A lot of goalkeepers are confidence keepers. So there are moments when they will just be absolutely brilliant. And there'll be moments when they've just lost it, and that you only have to lose it for 5-10 minutes and it's catastrophic. Zanef is currently on fire, and that's because his confidence is through the roof. So, you know, yeah, absolutely brilliant to see that. But, you know, I called him a confidence keeper, and he is a confidence keeper. You know, so that, I think that's no bad thing. You still want a lot of your players that are going to get 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 every single game. Those are the kind of players you like to have. And, you know, who's that in our team at the moment? Who's the 7 or 8 out of 10 every week? Davidson, maybe? Curry, perhaps? You know, you want more of that. Pell. A Sal's good. But, like, you know, Pell is like, he varies too much. You know, he's a bit of a swingometer, as Mark's doing. But, like, you know, we need to do it.
My early player of the year. He's my POTY, Harry Pell. I'm voting already. I'm voting right now.
But that's because Harry Pell's an old school Wimbledon player, isn't he? That is the point. And we are the same old Wombles. So we all love the kind of Harry Pell, even though, apart from Adam, who will hate all the kind of dive. I'm not a fan of the I fall over a bit too much. But
he got pushed. He got pushed. It should have been a penalty. I don't understand why that keeper's still on the pitch. Refereeing at this level is all over the place.
Oh, no, it is totally. But, I mean, the funny thing is the yellow that he got on Saturday, I didn't think he deserved that, actually, because it was, again, he was being wound up and the same sort of thing happened, you know, so...
That was combined.
He's not falling over. Or like it's not the same thing. That's what I really hate is when they... Yeah, when Pig obviously just fall over all the time and drive me absolutely nuts. But whatever, I clearly don't know who my favourite players are. Although the guy I like now, what's his name? Is it Bilet? What's his name? Bilet, is that right?
Bila, I believe it's pronounced Bila.
Oh, I like him. Oh, right, okay. Oh, I like him. I like him a lot.
So here's the thing, Bila, if we're going to call him Bila, let's call him Bila all the way through. He apparently was one of those favoured to make a strong impression this season, to come in and actually make the right back spot his own. He got injured pre-season and everyone forgot about him. We started the season playing, as we know, 3-5-2. We had Pierce, Nightingale and...
Brown.
Yeah, playing in the back three. And then we had Gunter right back and Curry left back. That was the team, the defence, that kept a clean sheet and beat Gillingham with that wonderful leap by Curry at the end to get the 2-0. And here we are coming into halfway point of the season. And with the exception of Curry, none of the rest of that back five can get in the team. And why would you put them in the team on current squad performance and results?
I totally agree, Mark. I think, and you know, and you look at how different that team at the start of the season is to now. I mean, like, equally in midfield, you've got Pell and Woodyard, you know, who are like that's centre of that midfield. Davidson up front is like absolutely solid. You've got a spine, a strong spine, which again we haven't had, and you know that's a bit to do with the fact we've had injuries. We haven't had the kind of right people there. Now you look at it and go that's solid, which is just a real relief, because I don't think we've had a solid spine for I don't know how long. You know, and we definitely didn't under Robbo. You know, it's good to have that. And admittedly, the other thing is that defence is so young. You know, talk about it. I mean, that is just, I mean, you know, basically, you know, we're all old enough. If they have kids, that you know, we're like way old. You know, well old enough to have them as kids. They're almost like enough to be our grandkids. That's how young they are.
You know how old you are, Niall? Yeah, they're all 20, basically.
Yeah. Which is just phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, that is just, you shouldn't have that knowledge of experience. I mean, to play in defence at centre-back particularly, it takes, you have to have some nous, because it's naturally, it's an intelligent game to play properly at centre-back. And they are doing really well. I'm really impressed with that. And, you know, equally, you can just see them growing and becoming so consistent, which is exactly what we've missed. I'm talking football. What's going on here, people? Help me out.
Yeah, isn't it? Well, look, I mean, we talked about strength in depth, but actually Swindon on Saturday, though we didn't get the actual result, we actually had a bench which had Marsh, it had Pierce, it had Hudlin, and it had Gunter. It actually had, well, I don't know what Gunter and Pierce between them had probably played the best part of about 1,000 league games, something ridiculous. I mean, we've had Gunter and Ogundore and Biller play right back. Understandably, Ogundore, unfortunately, I think it was Grimsby, had a bit of a shocker and hasn't actually been seen since. Sutton. Hasn't been seen since, either injured or just out of form, but that's understandable because the young kid's going to have peaks and troughs like that. But Biller has come in and taken his opportunity. And even if he doesn't necessarily manage to keep that up, you've still got the opportunity where you know that Gunter will come in, he will be solid, he won't be flamboyant, he'll probably be a 6.5 out of 10 every game, which is positive to see. And Curry has had his little dip and it seems to have come back again. Curry is like that amazing seasoned pro, someone like Terry Phelan from back in the day when, frankly, you never noticed he was actually playing because he was just so good all the time.
I'm interested, though, with people like Pierce, Gunter and Marsh, will they be happy staying on the bench? Because I think they were brought in with the idea that they would be first teamers. And, I mean, this feels like it's going to, you know, I'm not sure where Gunter goes after this, to be honest with you.
But, I mean, you're right. But then what you've got is you've got three people in there that could manage a game. You know, if you're looking at last 10, knackered team, you could bring on people that will just manage, you know, just like play game, you know, just like see out a game, which we've not had before. Because how many times goes back to what, it was 37 points, wasn't it, that we lost last season for the last 10 minutes. You know, if games are 80 minutes, we'd be on the brink of the League One playoffs last season. And that's the difference. No, but that's the point. Whereas you think about that substitute bench are actually people that are beneficial for us. Whether I think they're happy there, definitely not. You know, some people like Gunter and Pierce probably realise that they're at the end of their careers and they've got a role to play in a club that's you've got to love. Come on, we're brilliant. AFC Wimbledon, fantastic for everything we stand for. And maybe they've got some morals and just think that's it.
I guess Gunter was using us in practical terms as a vessel to be able to be match fit, to be able to get to the World Cup, which he obviously got to. Unfortunately, didn't play a minute, but at least he had that experience. You imagine that he probably wouldn't necessarily want to carry on playing for Wales because he's not likely to be. In fact, he's not even third choice right now. So that's got to be demoralising when you see younger, better, fitter international players ahead of you, let alone how it will be at club level. I mean, a centre-back, we've had Nightingale, Pierce, Brown, Towler, PK and Luke Jenkins play centre-back this season. None of them have necessarily let us down, but actually PK and Towler, to me, actually it's a proper partnership. It's almost a, I hate to say, you know, Perry Blackwell level, but again, Perry Blackwood, they just played so well week in, week out, you didn't notice they were playing. They shot the whole time.
And they started playing together when they were both really young. You know, they would have been, well, Blackwell was England under 21, a total constant regular for us. Perry would have been the same sort of age, you know, at that time. And they were just quality. So, yeah, there is a kind of really good understanding between those two, which is great, isn't it?
I love the fact that I decided to favour sponsoring Alex Pearce as our Wynn wonderful online supporters kit sponsor. And then, of course, he's lost his place. And, you know, on form doesn't look like he's going to get it back, unfortunately. But to answer your question, Matt, about say someone like George Marsh, he had an opportunity. I don't know how many games he played at the beginning of the season, but he and Magoma were the two in midfield that started the season. Didn't really work, didn't really get things going. He didn't, you know, he had an opportunity there with Magoma, who obviously was initially looking quite flashy and quite creative, but still needed an arm on the shoulder to actually guide him through games. But actually, what Paris seemed to do is look equally flashy in one hand, but frustrating in the other hand, and get himself booked on too many occasions, and on one occasion get sent off for no particular reason, even when he wasn't under particular pressure. With Woodyard in the team, he seems to have calmed down.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the difference about Woodyard and Pell. You know, I just think both of those, you know, whatever. I do think they made a big difference to us. But anyway, we've got St Evenage this weekend. So, it, you know, it'll be interesting to how we deal with them, which is going to be a real tough task. Largely, the biggest tough task will be how the hell I get to the ground with a train strike on and probably frozen pitch. So, no idea. And I've got to be somewhere else at 7 o'clock. So, I don't know. I might just walk.
Yeah, I can't get there because I can't get home, basically. It's just so, yeah, I am annoyed about the train strikes. I get it, but man, you know, do it during the week. don't mess up my weekends, please.
Exactly. I think they just need to sort out, pay the train drivers the amount they deserve, and then it'll sort our football out. A little bit of politics for you there.
Thank you, Mr. Millicent Cooper. So here's the crazy thing about going through position by position. In midfield, we've had loads and loads and loads of players. We've had Pell, we've had Magoma, we've had Frimpong, we've had Marsh, we've had Woodyard. Obviously, if you count, you know, Asal and Chislett as midfield players as opposed to strikers. And it took him about 15 games to kind of work out what the appropriate formation is. The trick now is to bring somebody in as good as, if not better than, those players. Whether we have the resources to do that in the transfer window, that would be nice.
I can't see how you drop any of those people. I mean, for me, the revelation out of all of those has been Chislett. I mean, it's just you would say that he's a, you know, he's one of the first names on the team sheet now. He's become that good, and I don't think I think now is the first time you would put your team sheet out and we'd all have the same team sheet. Virtually all of us would have the team sheet. There would be nothing that we would change. I mean, I'm interested in how NYC fits into it. I think that's going to be really, really interesting.
So what is our starting 11 then, Matt? I mean, is it Zanef, then Curry, we're saying Huss. And then are we saying then in the as a back four, then it's Towler and PK.
Yeah.
And then in midfield, are we looking, what are we looking at with Sal, Woodyard, Paris, Pell, who's on the other side? Chiz. And then up front, Davison. And that's our 11. You know.
It's genuinely that easy.
Isn't it nice to actually have a settled team for the first time in how many years as well? Or a team that just does pick itself, you know, and you've got, and if you look at the back four, right, if when Nightingale's back in, that's a potential there. You know, actually, we haven't had Brown fit for a while. On the other side, you know, you've got cover there. So it's not terrible in defence. And in midfield, probably midfield is where we probably need to do. If we're looking at Marsh not really cutting the mustard, there's another centre midfielder is probably where we're missing.
Yeah, it's interesting that, though, it's kind of changed a bit, hasn't it, in terms of the players have settled in, they've sort of found their form. So now it's kind of, instead of shoring up the defence, we probably need a bit of extra depth in the midfield space now. Because, yeah, like you say, we get a couple of people back fit, then we've kind of got most places covered, which is, considering how short, small our squad is, actually, that's really good, you know. So, yeah, maybe it's not as bad as I kind of thought.
It'd be interesting if Assal goes. If Assal goes in January.
He can't go in January. He can't go in January. I don't, whatever's offered has to be rejected, surely, because it's working, you know. I mean, I suppose if it, because the other thing is, didn't Assal play with NYC for a long time? So they've got there's a relationship there that could come together, especially if Davidson is, I'm not saying NYC should necessarily take Davidson's spot, but you'd maybe go 4-2-4 or something, I don't know, whatever it would be. But you know what I mean? Assal can't go. That would be, I just think that would, I think we'd get more money if we waited, for starters. And I can't see that, I mean, surely we can reject offers. And, you know, even if, I guess Assal has a say, and if he has an agent, the agent has a say or whatever, but, and then might get annoyed. I guess if you'd, well, like with any work, isn't it? If you have a disgruntled employee, they may no longer perform in the way that you expect. I don't know if footballers should do that, but
I think with the transfer window, the way it is that in January, people who spend in January are panicking, right? So actually prices are often inflated in January. So the reality is that we might get a stupidly silly offer, as in like big for a sale. And that might be, that's the only thing I can think about, whether it becomes too big to turn down. That's the only thing I can think about with a sale. We don't need to sell, right? We don't need to sell in January. And that's the big thing. I mean, there are probably a couple of players we could do with offloading, but we don't need to sell.
But then who, like, okay, so say we think there's some silly offer would come in. What we're looking at League One, at least, I guess. Who's going to be like buying him in League One?
It'll be a low league championship club trying to avoid relegation, I would have thought. Mark?
Huddersfield, again.
Potentially,
yeah, they might, but they're like they've got 19 points. They've been yeah. Well, I suppose it's quite close at the bottom compared to ours, but
that's where I think you'd go. You know, you'd be looking at that sort of level, either that or a club pushing at the top of League One. That's where I think he would be.
I wouldn't want to go to a relegation fighting team in the Championship, though. Would you? I guess you get paid.
Two divisions above where we are.
I guess you get paid a load more money and stuff. But yeah, but you could end up being relegated instant. You could still be relegated because you're in a dogfight.
But then there's so many players that have done that for us, and it's like it's literally going to come down to a big club putting, well, a Championship club with money to burn.
Okay, so how, like, has Huddersfield got money? I don't know. Has Blackpool got money? Has West Bromwich Albion, have they got money? Are those three clubs, have they got money?
Yeah, I would thought all three. West Brom's got parachute payments.
Yeah, they've got, Adam, they've all got money. Yeah. And it's for Assal, it's not necessarily about a case of being, if he goes to Huddersfield and gets relegated, he'd probably be on three times, four times more money. So it's not just about where you play your football, it's how much money you're going to get. And if someone could give you a contract which is a 3 or 4 year contract on X amount of money.
Yeah, you'd be talking at that level, you'd be getting 6-7 grand a week or something like that.
I suppose it's a different thing, isn't it? I like where I work and I like staying where I worked. I've worked there for a long time.
Yeah, but then there are people that are like that, and that's true. You know, there are Wimbledon players that actually have that ethos, and that's what they're about, because they like where they're at. The reality also for us is if somebody comes in and offers us, say, 2 or 3 million for a sale, we'd probably be a bit stupid to turn that down.
Sure, so long as we paid off the debt with that money.
Well, do you know what you do with it? You probably look, you know, I don't know where you two, I don't think it would necessarily be, because we're financially fairly stable, really. You know, the debt.
Well, unless you invest in something that's going to bring like instant return on investment kind of stuff, something you transform something in the stadium that suddenly is going to be bringing back money week on week, maybe that.
There are lots. I mean, like we had Danny on last week. So you think about if we properly kit out the third floor, if we have proper AV, if we look at doing more fan engagement stuff, we could actually, and we're pretty close to filling the stadium, you know, you start going, it's like there's loads of more potential in what we can do. We need to be getting stuff in, you know, 365 days a week. And if we've got the right kind of resources, then we could, that's a long-term investment. But we're football fans, you know, it's very difficult for us to go, if we put that 3 million we get from a sound, we spend 1.5 million decking out the stadium in the right ears. Long term will be much more secure, but you know, we're gonna do that.
And short term, we've all got the memory of the fact that we took 300k for Oli Palmer, which on the face of it seemed a reasonable deal. We got Sam Cosgrove in return, who was a complete and utter flop, and we got relegated. Now, those two things are not directly related to each other, but one happened and then the second one happened and then the third one ultimately happened. And there's lots of reasons, obviously, why the third one happened, which wasn't directly down to Palmer. But I think if we sell and a sale, or even, you know, someone comes in and has been scouting Curry, because apparently he was being scouted last summer already, which seemed quite amazing to me, as he barely made his first team debut at that point. But if someone is going to do that and then offer something from the Championship, then, you know, do we have someone to replace them with? If we're losing in a sale, is there an opportunity to spend 100k or so, as we did on Davison allegedly, to be able to bring in someone at the similar level? You imagine that Jackson's still got his eye on a few players he knew at Charlton. Charlton seems to be an absolute basket case right now. They've just sacked Jackson's replacement, Ben Garner, after, relatively speaking, about 5 minutes. So if I'm a Charlton player, I want to get out of there as soon as possible, frankly. But equally, if they're at Charlton, they'll be on decent contracts lengthwise and also salary-wise, and they're in League One. So
the other thing, just because I've got my iPad and I can look these things up. The other thing is, if you look at sort of our position versus the relegation spots compared to the other leagues, we are quite a way away from, there's a bigger difference, more points difference generally. So, you know, that might be taken into consideration. Say, well, if we got a load of money, we could afford to lose some games. We're not going to get relegated, but we're not going to get promoted, you know. So I don't know. I mean, I guess that all that stuff comes into play, doesn't it? Should come into play.
The best bit about our most recent run is I haven't even looked at the relegation spots for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, which is positive. I'm going to wrap up this little review with a couple of simple questions for everybody. And I think one of you already came out. I think it was Matt already came out and gave their prediction already. But now that we know, or at least now that we've seen a lot of our players play for best part of half a season, throw something out there in terms of your predictions for player of the season and young player of the season.
That's hard, actually. Now, I mean, like, I might go Davison player of the season and young player of the season. Oh, well, it depends how young Sal is. If Sal counts as young player of the season, then he would be that, or because he'd be challenging for my player of the season. If he's too old, then I hate going for lone players, but I think Towler's been brilliant.
I would say, hey, I'd love to give it to Pell. I would vote for Pell any hour, but you'd have to say Davison. And the weird thing is, it should actually be a Sal, should be our player of the season. But I think there's something about him. There's a weird disconnect. I mean, in all the pictures, he just looks really miserable. So just there's a sense that he's begrudgingly with us, I have no basis other than the pictures that I see of him. Do you know what I mean? But he should be, in theory, I think he should be our player of the season, because he's a phenomenal talent. But it would be someone like Davison or Pell. Who have a presence, is it? And as for young player of the year, then I agree with Niall on this. It'd be hard to see past Curry.
Yeah, I mean, I think Davison or Pell clearly would probably be player of the year. But like Matthew says, really, Asel probably should be that. Young player of the year. What does that mean? That under how what age is that?
21, I think.
Okay. I don't even know that. I mean, to be honest, I don't even know the ages of any of our players. But yeah, Curry's been playing a blinder. How old's Belair, though, or whatever his name is? Because I like him. I just think he's pretty cool.
They're all 20, apart from PK. All the back four right now are 20.
Okay. I mean, Magoma would have been it. For, I don't know how old he is either, whatever. For goodness sake, it's a nightmare. Magoma would have been it for me, but he kind of...
19. Okay. I just keep adding ages in.
Thank you. Magoma would have been it for me, but he kind of like... He's kind of lost it a bit for some reason. I just like... I like Belair, whatever he's doing or whatever. I don't... I'm totally probably not saying his name right. I keep thinking...
Huss.
Okay, fine. I like him. I think he's awesome. I just the couple of games I've seen, I just think he's doing stuff, and I just like it. So I'm gonna say that Huss is gonna bring it out of the bag for us.
All right. My answers aren't gonna be that different, but I think the only reason Davison would win Player of the Season is if we flirt with the playoffs to get nowhere and finish about 10th, because for effort alone he needs to get it. But equally, we'll finish 10th if he doesn't score more than 15 goals, and he's a centre forward after all. However, I would probably give it to a Sal in a kind of thank you very much Jack Redoni style, swan off into the sunset, because we know that you're going to take a better offer to go to the championship, and everybody is comfortable with that, whether or not we get to the playoffs or otherwise. From a young player of the year perspective, for me, it's a toss-up between Towler and Curry. Curry's had a dip. Towler hasn't had a dip at all yet. He was unfortunate to score an own goal in one of his first games, and he's bounced back from that really well. So, yeah, I'd stick my neck out and say Riley Towler for now. And I'm sure someone will know that we have given the young player of the year to a Loney player before, possibly Dobson, possibly someone else. Can't remember who it would have been.
Did Ramsdale get it?
Ramsdale may well have got it, actually. May well have done, indeed. Okay, I'm going to wrap up now quickly, gentlemen, because we could talk about these things all night. Some simple numbers for everybody today. I say simple all the time, but they seem to be really straightforward on the basis that I've told you all about these on the WhatsApp group over the last week anyway. So let's start off with Adam. Adam's number this week is number 5.
5 minutes added on time at the end of the second half of the Swindon game. What? Come on, that's like a proper stat because of the World Cup at this point in time. That's the shortest amount of overtime ever.
I tell you every week, you make it more complicated than it ever is.
We haven't scored that many goals. There was that was the amount. No, that was the amount of people in the row that Mark was sitting in at Swindon game. No? I'm trying to think of the stuff you've told me on the WhatsApp group. 5. No, I don't know. I don't know. Why would I even pretend I know?
Sadly, Adam, even I think I might know this.
Go on then, Matt.
Isn't it 5 consecutive clean sheets in a row?
Yes, it is.
Oh, sugar, for goodness sake.
Apparently, this is the best run of clean sheets we've ever had since we came back into the Football League. We had 4 in a row in January 2018, and 4 in a row in March 2019. Never had 5 in a row since we came back in the league.
That was a tweet link you posted, yeah? Yeah, which I just looked at and went, oh, brilliant, and just sent it on to my dad and my brother. I didn't really, like, read it. I was just like, oh, yeah, great stat, bye.
Okay, as you just got that one right, we'll throw one in from Matt, and Matt's number is
81.84. It's like literally my favourite number. 81.84. I just love that number. It something bounces off the tongue. Nick. 81.84.
I reckon I think I know.
Matt, if Adam knows, you're in so much trouble.
Come on, you're going to have at least one guess.
I took Adam's answer. I've used up all my brain capacity on bailing Adam out again.
Thank you.
81.84? I don't know, Mark. I mean, is it the average player rating for a cell?
I reckon I know what it is, right? Because the BBC Radio 5 were talking about it during the World Cup game. It was cooler. What? Yeah, it was cooler there than any other game. So I reckon that's the Fahrenheit degrees of the England versus France game.
There.
Boom.
There
I got
you
it.
Go.
Thank you.
There you go. You're right. You're right, Mark. He's blowing me out of the water with that because I bet that's the answer, yeah?
Once again, that is much more interesting an answer to than the one I've actually got.
81.84.
Niall Cooper. Show them the way.
For the fuck? No, sorry. I know. I got that far without swearing. Sorry, right. You can edit that out.
Edit.
81.
Is that how much the fine is? Is that Niall's fine for swearing?
Yes.
81.84.
Paid in cash for each of us.
Is 81.84 the amount it costs to travel to Swindon?
No. £30 return.
81.84.
Oh, it's the local radio station of Swindon on FM.
Doesn't go below 88, Adam, just for your sense.
Swindon.
81.84. Is it the speed of which one of our goals went in? 81.84 kilometres per hour.
I wish. All right, I'll put you out of your misery. 81.84 is the percentage of the percentage our crowd average is this season as a percentage of full capacity of the stadium.
Which makes us the number one in League Two in terms of
yes, it
capacity
does.
Crowds.
Higher
like,
than Orion and Stockport.
Yeah. So that's it. And the only reason it's not higher is because there are away fans there aren't as many away fans.
No, so there was 1,000 Grimsby, like so fair play
thing.
To them.
Yeah, no, it's good.
It's just really though, isn't it? You know, the smaller your ground, I mean, I don't think it matters.
But in League Two, there are a lot of small grounds, though, Matt. So you know that you can
it's
only feel
Bradford.
We've got. Bradford are less than us, but they do get 17,000. But then their ground. If we had a ground that was twice the size of what we've got, I would say our average attendance would be 10k.
But then
who knows?
Because the reality is that we have had games where there would have been allowed to be more away fans, and there have been times when we could have got more home fans in. And so I think we would have definitely, with a ground twice the size, we'd be averaging 10k.
Well, I know that Bradford are quite competitive in terms of how cheap they keep their season ticket prices, and they have got an average crowd this season, even though they're relatively not completely dominating in the league, though in the playoff zones. Their average attendance is about 1,500 or 1,800 higher than it was last year. So fair play to them, especially in these economic times. Final question and final number is Niall's, and Niall's number this week is number 8.
Harry Pell.
You're all obsessed with Pell. Just get a room.
Harry Pell, because he's great. 8 is the amount of games the mighty, mighty Dons have gone unbeaten in the league.
Correct. Second only in the whole of the Football League to Sheffield Wednesday with 9. Correct. Yeah. Well done. You see? You guys know this. You just don't remember the right answers at the right times.
Well, I don't know any of it. What are you talking about?
Well done, everybody. Let's wrap it up there. We've been the same old Wombles. Thank you to Mr. Matt Cooper, Mr. Niall Cooper, and Mr. Adam Proctor. And that was episode 17. Fingers crossed the thaw comes and we can all see you for the Stevenage game at the weekend. And the Dons Trust AGM next Monday at Plough Lane and on Zoom from 7 p.m.
Which will be the inaugural crowning of Mark Lewis, Dons Trust Board member.
More importantly, it'll be Niall Cooper disappearing. So thank you very much.
I will no longer be here. I will disappear off, walk off into the sunset.
Thank you and good night.
Cheers, guys.